When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Live from the Bills' famous cheese spread studios in the downstairs pub, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Freddie is already banging into his microphone, making noises that will have to be edited out of the episode.
I thought that was a beatbox.
Later.
I think he just dropped his high noon.
As you heard... back from his trip that we touched on last week, over my right shoulder at the high top table is the big fella, the Tuna Country Matt Kemp, and bellied up to the bar, a man whose t-shirt matches his moniker. He is indeed double trouble. He is the fabulous one, Freddie Benders.
Ha ha! Little Stevie Ray, double trouble.
He shot from the hip on that one. I like it.
That's right, buddy. You a Stevie Ray guy there, Tuna?
Yeah, I like Stevie Ray, man. Oh, I'm not like a, you know, I don't like seek out, but like every time I, now I say that, but there are times I go down like YouTube rabbit holes with him to watch him live. So.
Oh, yeah. Can you believe he's been gone 35 years?
That's wild, man.
35
and he really didn't start popping up till really hardcore in the 80s. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I would say
like this t-shirt concert is 86.
Well, yeah, that's when he broke real
right.
big. So his years of now, people in guitar, you know, and in blues knew about him from about 82,
right?
But 86 is when he really popped nationally,
right?
And then unfortunately we lost him in 1990, so he had four years really
did a lot of background songs for David Bowie, all kinds of people.
He's one of, I know, obviously kind of pop it turned on a whole different like subset of white teenage kids onto the blues. Mm-hmm. That ended up becoming
Great
players,
Eric Johnson,
influenced by him, you know. But anyway, well, that was kind of cool. We made a little turn there.
Yeah, two songs you gotta check out, Tuna. Two of my deep cut faves: Riviera Paradise and Chitlin's Con Carne.
Okay.
By Stevie Ray, no singing at all.
Okay, that's what I can get into that.
Oh yeah.
Want to remind everybody, we are on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook. Look us up there. Give us a follow. Give us a like. If you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. That is how this show continues to go on. So we spent quite a bit of time last week. Tuna wasn't here. I want to get in a little bit later on to some of the highlights of your trip. But before we get into that, I thought we would just... piggyback on what we spent most of the episode on last week. I know not everybody's big soccer guys, but last week was a good, it was a good week, quite frankly, to talk about that because, we didn't have a lot of other pressing issues going on. So, we previewed the, quarterfinals of the Club World Cup, the semis, and what we hoped would be the final of the Gold Cup. And the Gold Cup did turn out the way that we had kind of anticipated and had hoped. Unfortunately, the United States was unable to win that Gold Cup final. They lost to Mexico on Sunday evening. And the half of the final of the Club World Cup is set, with the other half being set tomorrow. So right off the get-go, Fred, thoughts about the Gold Cup final and what we saw leading into the Club World Cup finals that'll be coming up later on this weekend.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming you watched it, didn't you? Were you able to watch it too, Tuna?
Yeah, I was able to, but I didn't.
As much as you could. You watched the documentary.
Yeah, I seen it. I know what goes on.
You knew how bad
matches.
It was going to be. And you know, it's USA, Mexico. USA, I think, with the exception of not a lot of great teams there, Canada was ranked 30th, whatever. They overachieved, in my opinion, without five of their starters that will be on the World Cup roster and team starting to get to the final. I think they found a little mojo. El Tri, a la Mexico, is a better team. They were full force.
What do you
they
call them? El Tri?
El Tri is their nickname, yeah.
It means the tree?
No, El Tri, T-R-I.
Oh.
The three colors.
Okay.
Three colors
of the flag.
Now that makes sense. I can get behind that.
And you know, they were full force. They had all their best players. So when you put all that together, obviously they were the favorite in this match. Also, they had all the fans there.
Yeah.
Which happens in USA, Mexico. It's always going to be a mixed bag of fans there, and it's always going to be rowdy as hell. And I think these two teams have had their struggles in the past 10 years to where they're almost to a point now where no one makes fun of the other team. They have their struggles and have had their struggles. I think both teams within the last probably 10 years have both hit rock bottom. I can remember when Mexico, just not long ago, 6-7 years, hit rock bottom.
And the United States has really dominated
the
matchup for the last several years. Really.
In major competition, the U.S. was 4-1-0 against Mexico. This is their first win in five major competition matchups. So, you know, kudos to Mexico. They were the team that had the two quality plays, if you will. And I know you all hear me say quality and world class a lot, and that's really all that matters in soccer. That's what's going to get you over the hump. Before I criticize the USA a little bit, I want to say that I was proud of them. I thought they played hard. I thought that some of the players that weren't as good throughout the tournament that I was hard on really played well against Mexico.
Yeah.
Arfston and De La Torres. A matter of fact, I thought that Luna, whereas Tuna and I were talking, you know, Tuna's right. He really was our world-class quality guy in the tournament that made things happen that you just – which is a one touch or a dribble move and a shot on goal. That's all. That's what you got to have.
Well, really the only game that I watched, match that I watched was the Guatemala. And where he had the two goals in that.
Right.
And I mean, there was just no hesitation with that guy. And that's what I've complained about. One of my biggest problems with soccer is guys going for the extra touch, and he didn't, he just attacked.
Right. He just attacked.
And I like that.
And correction, last show, I think I said Costa Rica, and it was Guatemala on that match when he played so well. But you're right. And then this one, excuse me, it may have been the defensive scheme that Mexico played with. It may have been where we had him positioned, but he just kind of got lost in the shuffle in this match and couldn't really do too much. Maybe it was because he shaved his mustache and his head. I don't know,
mustache
but
in his head, huh?
Yeah, he did a little changing of his looks, which, you know, and I don't want to
do that in the middle of
never
in the,
that.
Not in the middle of, you do it before or after,
but as Alexi Lawless said, and he is a hard critic of the United States, just like I am. You know,
great cowboy
hat. If you want to be world, if you want to be the guy, if you want to be the man, if you want to be world class, you got to do it every big game. And he kind of got lost in this game, and we needed it again. Nothing against him. It happens,
well,
you know.
I think, unfortunately, with the relative dearth of other excellent talent, Mexico found it a lot easier to take him out of the game.
They did.
They were like, anybody else is going to beat us, but not him.
Right, and they came in knocking him around.
You could tell right from the get-go. Yeah. They were real physical with
him.
Very
physical.
They pressured him every time he had a touch on the ball. Like, he was not going to get into space. And I thought as the game wore on, it became more and more obvious that, much like the United States' only goal, it was either going to come off a set piece or off of Mexico making a blunder of some sort, which they did. And they made a, what to me seemed like a fairly obvious handball in the penalty area.
Yeah. When that a guy's on all fours and he touches the ball with his hand,
he picked himself up with it. He palmed it.
That's pretty much a handball, yes.
And so I still am not quite sure where that call or lack thereof came from, but I'm not surprised. Seems like in these games there's always one of those.
No, I think that we found ourselves defending way too deep in that match, and maybe it's because what Mexico did, but we were – after we scored that goal, and credit to Berhalter and Richards, Chris Richards was my MVP of this whole tournament for the United States. Set aside what Luna did on offense, he's not really that great of a defensive player. And what Richards did was pretty phenomenal. He scored three goals. I think he scored three. I know he scored two. And on as a defender, and probably played the best defense I've seen in quite a long time for the United States, for a younger player up and coming, Chris Richards and Tyler Adams were both fantastic. Luna, I think Tillman got tired; he kind of fell off. And to be honest with you, Reams, I felt like could have blocked that. Could have given a little more effort to block the shot by Raul Jimenez, and he went there. But Berhalter, we found something with him in set pieces, and I think we got a lot to go with. I know another thing, if you want me to be kind of to criticize them a hair, and then we'll end with that on the U.S., unless you all have anything y'all want to say, and maybe you will when I say this, is we really played with 10 players. Okay, it's hard to beat Mexico when you're playing with 10 players and your striker is absent from the team. You know, the guy that plays up front that everyone kicks the ball to, that tries to score the goals, that doesn't have to run on defense and play his ass off back and forth. And that would be, I'm just going to call him a Yang, Ali Yang, whatever he's called. I don't know why everyone pats him on the back and pumps him up. He is an absolute nothing on this team. He brings nothing to the table except 6'4 height. At least Josie Altidore used to be able to get a goalie kick or something in the air and have possession of it to distribute to someone making a run. He cannot do anything. He trips over the ball. He can't dribble. He can't hold the ball. I never even see him head the ball. He had one goal a long time ago in the tournament. Who cares? He needed to come out, and they should have brought somebody in. I just don't see that guy doing anything to help us. He was basically a blob out there for the whole game. I can't dog him any more than saying that he was basically absent from the game. He did have an opportunity at the end, and he freaking missed the ball down by the goalie. But he seems tired. He's clumsy. I just don't get it. I don't understand what he brings to the table for the U.S. at all. He has no quality whatsoever. But that's what we're missing. We're missing, when you watch these club teams, we're missing Just, I mean, you see these guys in the game today at Chelsea. You know, the guy gets the ball, he knocks it down to his foot, and he takes the shot. Is he looking to see where the goalkeeper is? No. He doesn't even know where the goalie is. He doesn't care. He's aiming at the pipes. He is aiming at a place that he practices every day of his life, and he's putting the ball in that angled area. If it gets deflected, it does. But the goalie doesn't matter. He will not get to it. And with Luna, we had that a couple times, but we just don't have that with any other players where you can just take a shot and shoot. And Tuna really called it out that at least Luna makes quick plays. You know, one touch, one dribble, and makes his mind up immediately and shoots. And until we get a couple more guys like that, fellas, we're going to be losing to Bulgaria, you know. But I do think we had something to really build on. I'm proud of the guys, put it that way. I'm proud of the USA team that played. And let's see what happens. It's up to the coach, Ponchetta, to start meshing in these other five big players.
Right. And we will certainly
get it on.
Keep an eye on that as we head towards the World Cup.
Once we get Tuna all wearing a USA soccer jersey, we are doing something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, go USA.
There you go.
Yeah. USA, all the way.
Yeah, all the way.
We've got Chelsea on through to the final, as Freddie said. Tomorrow, 3 o'clock, the other semifinal I think everybody is very much looking forward to. PSG and Real Madrid.
I think we called that from the start, didn't we?
Pretty much. I mean, there's three of the best teams in the world right there, and two of them playing against each other tomorrow for a spot in the final.
Must watch, must DVR, must record, must anything you can do tomorrow.
Who did PSG beat in the Champions League to win it?
Inter Milan.
Yep. That's
right. Yep. And matter of fact, they are two-time defending champs. Mm-hmm. And you know, Real Madrid's bringing off guys like Mbappe off the bench,
right?
Who does a scissor kick, a bicycle kick to score within, you know, being out on the field in 8 minutes. That's what world class is called. Every player at every position's unreal. It's must watch.
I want to talk about, while we're on soccer, man, what's up with these coaches complaining about the heat? Like, Dortmund had their subs sitting in the locker room so they wouldn't get hot.
Right.
What's going on here? I've been in Europe. It's hot over there.
I mean, they have little fans underneath that little cubicle box that they all sit in, the dugout, if you will. I don't get it. But I love that you keep an eye on that kind of stuff.
Well, it's the drama of the cup that is what draws me in, not necessarily the sport.
Right.
I love how Chelsea can play today and they can just go, this one guy played for us. He hasn't really played for us yet. He's only been here on the team three times. And one of the guys has a card and he's suspended. So we're going to put this Brazilian in, one of 130 of the most world-class players in the world. We're going to put him in. Oh, by the way, he's going to score the two goals against his old team. And they're going to be two of the most beautiful goals you'll ever see in your life.
I think we should put some World Cup matches next year in Baton Rouge. In July. Let them play at Tiger Stadium,
down
dude.
Down in the swamp. Yeah. Yes. I'm with you. But, dude, I'm so looking forward to it, guys. Tomorrow is going to be fun. And then Chelsea, who I did not see making that side, coming up against the other two that we obviously did have coming up on the other side. And all I can say is to end with that is, My favorite, and I'm putting money on them for the World Cup. I don't care if they can't get out of their own way with beauty and controversy from the president and all the people in the continent in the country. But Brazil has at least 80 of the best players in the world. I've never seen so many on different teams in my life that are all playing so great right now. The quality of them. So I'm picking Brazil to win the World Cup next year.
Jesus, Fred, it's a little early for that.
I feel like half these guys, like best players, weren't even playing.
Oh yeah, some.
So
of them
I mean,
just
like I can't
the...
sit there and be like, oh,
well
this,
in the
this
Club
team's
World been... Cup, true, yeah. But most of them, I mean, you know, when you see some of these guys that, like, Rafinha's the best player for Brazil right now, and he plays for Barcelona. He didn't even play in this Club World Cup.
A lot of these CONCACAF guys, they were playing for their club teams in the club. Like, you know, your boy Gio Reyna, you always talk about. He's a, you know, low-level scrub for Dortmund.
He is.
And he chose to play with them still.
And he chose to – well, he could have gotten a trophy. You know, he could have gotten a medal. And been a FIFA World Club
champion. He gets
paid
by them too,
right?
Yeah,
which is a big thing. But
does the U.S. not pay their guys? Like, what is that? Like a, I don't understand the pay structure of. They just let other teams borrow guys. Like, oh, you need a player, you can borrow from us, and they give them money. And like, I don't understand soccer. Like, imagine the world of the NFL where like you're in the playoffs and you're like, you know what? We need a quarterback because Mahomes got hurt. Cincinnati didn't make it, so we call up the Bengals and be like, hey, can we borrow Joe Burrow for, like, a couple games? And we'll give you, like, $2 million.
I think it's more look at the Olympics. So Michael Phelps is swimming for his country, and he's not really getting paid anything.
I guess I'm talking on the club level. Like, they let other clubs – they put players on loan.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean,
I'd like to see the Dodgers get Paul Skeens on loan here at the in October.
I think to use Gio Reyna as an example, I think he did what Christian Pulisic did, but he just didn't get scrutinized for it.
No.
He's like, oh, I'm going to get all kinds of rest from the club time before I have to go and play for the U.S. for the World Cup and start training. And he's just sitting on the bench trying to get a medal with his team, with his club. You know, whereas Christian Pulisic's sitting on his couch and getting, ripped by everybody because his team didn't make it. But
well, speaking
we'll
of
see what happens.
The business side of things and things that I don't fully understand the way that they are happening right now. We've been talking about it for several weeks now. We thought we'd get into it at least a little bit tonight, and that is the world of the ever-changing landscape as it relates to college athletics. College football obviously is going to be starting here very soon. Quick plug that here in the next few weeks, we're going to start our conference breakdowns, predictions, etc. If you've listened to the show the last couple of years, I do feel like they're some of our best shows of the year. And not to toot our own horn, but I feel like we've been pretty accurate in a lot of the things that we have talked about that maybe you will not hear a lot of other places.
Unless somebody picks Iowa to go to the college football playoff. Well, and, I mean, I don't even know who did that.
I mean, that would have been, I mean, I think I might have went back and deleted all references.
Oh, good call, yeah.
To that. I'm glad you brought that up, though. but it seems like almost every day, guys, you are, you know, you scroll through your Twitter feed or whatever, and there's something new coming down the pipe relative to college athletics, whether it's NIL or the transfer portal or salary caps or scholarship limits or whatever. So, Tuna and Fred, I know you guys have been following this relatively closely. Why don't you just give an overview maybe of what we're looking at in the short term, and then we can get into where we think this might be heading in the long term. And I know there's a ton to get to, so start wherever you want.
So I guess this has been a little over a month now that the House settlement with the NCAA got concluded. Well, we think it's concluded. I think there's even appeals going on, and we don't even know what's for sure yet. Basically, like, every university is going to have a salary cap, if you will, that they pay their student athletes. I believe it's what, 20 and a half million, Fred, or 21 and a half?
Yeah. What's the name of this thing? This thing is called the House versus the NCAA settlement, right? Uh-huh.
Yep.
The House versus the NCAA settlement.
Now, I believe House was a swimmer. I forget the university that he's the one that sued, or she, or
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, and that's where all this stemmed from. So this has been going on for quite some time, and I guess the fallout from this is you are going to have a salary cap, and these schools, this is for all your student athletes that are on scholarship. The schools are going to have to decide how they're going to divvy this money up. Mm-hmm. So as of right now, I believe a majority of schools laid out a groundwork where I believe is it 60 to 70% of funds are going straight to football. And then that leaves 30 to 40% to go to all your other sports. So if you,
everything else.
Yeah.
If you're talking, you want a top tier basketball program.
Yeah.
You're going to do that top women's program. You're going to basketball
a revenue
program
sharing cap, if you will.
Yeah. But it's, it's going to be like, and they can get that money from outside sources, even if the revenue's not coming in. Like, I believe boosters can contribute to that $20 million or $20-25 million, because there are some schools that, a lot of schools that aren't even going to have that. So, like, you may have schools like Western Kentucky, which is sitting at a $15 million salary cap, because that's all the revenue that they're making, and they're going to have to divvy that up. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of going to separate out the haves and the have-nots.
Basically what this is doing is this settlement, it takes effect July. Well, it just started the end of July.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of stuff still under appeal.
But it's basically the end of amateurism in sports. Mm-hmm. Literally. It will never go back to being anything. It is, schools are directly paying athletes.
I don't believe right now that the athletes are actually considered under this employees, which that could end up changing. Mm-hmm. And if that changes, then you could see unions come in.
Right.
And then that could change other things. So we don't really know.
Third party operators. Yeah.
Yeah. All I'm going to basically talk about right now is what we do know. And that is that you're going to see schools have to decide, do we want a good baseball program or a really good basketball program? You're going to see a lot of change. Like, I could see Mississippi State putting a bunch of money into, and I wonder what Arkansas is going to do. You're talking about a school that is absolutely in love with football. They got Calipari down there and promised him the world. And then you've got a baseball program. I think they love baseball more than anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be weird to see how these schools divvy
it out.
Tell that
to all their fans that go to the football games.
Yeah,
so,
and what players get. Well, I guess they get an even share. But what's going to happen is NIL is still going to be a thing, but it's actually going to be name, image, and likeness like it was originally supposed to be. The structure we have right now, we have these collectives where just every Joe Schmo fan donates so much money, like – say Travis donates $10 a week to IU or something like that. You know what I mean? That goes to a collective. That collective pays athletes. That's going to be done. These players are going to actually have to prove that they are earning that money off of their name, image, and likeness.
Right.
And that will be audited by a third-party company called Deloitte.
Right. To make sure it's within the fair market value.
Exactly. Like I was saying outside, if, Joey Cornhole out there does a commercial for big boy Bill's Toyota, cheese. Yeah, Bill's cheese, and you decide to give him $5 million, they're going to compare him to other athletes that have done similar.
Right.
And if that market value exceeds it, they throw a red flag up.
Yes.
Now, here's my issue with this, and that's when you have all of these auditors working for Deloitte, we know that corruption's going to be a thing. What's going to keep some of these boosters from padding some of these auditors' pockets to overlook a few things?
I don't know what I mean?
And I'm just speculating, but we know corruption happens, especially when you have more hands involved than not. So that's something to keep an eye on. And I'm not really sure where this is going. This is not a finished product.
What about all the scholarship limitations, too?
That's another thing. We're going to see.
Schools are going to, based on their budget, is how they're going to give scholarships up.
We're going to see non-revenue sports start turning into club sports.
Roster limits.
Roster limits has always kind of been a thing, but they are expanding the football roster limits. No. Are they expanding or pulling some out?
I don't think they're expanding.
Maybe they're dropping down to 85. I'm not sure. I have to look at that. But, all your non-revenue sports, you're going to see them start to almost become club sports. And I'm assuming Title IX still comes into play, not for the money sharing, but for the amount of scholarships.
Right.
So, like, the non-revenue, like women's softball and – say, like, women's soccer and stuff like that, they're still going to have to keep that because of the scholarships for the football players.
Right.
So, but now the pay doesn't have to match.
Right. I think the collective bargaining that gives the athletes a little more power is so interesting in this. I just couldn't imagine every athlete being in a collective bargaining agreement where they're able to.
Well, it's almost easier than what you got going on now.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Because right now.
They have more power now.
Yeah, they have more power now, and that's kind of going to go away a little bit. But the transfer portal is still a thing, so you could come in there and leave and so on. And I could see in the future schools requiring a contract, like a 2-year contract, 3-year contract, basically saying you come here, you're guaranteeing that you're going to be a part of this roster for a minimum of 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. That's, again, speculation. I just think all the way that everything's moving, there's going to be so much change. The one thing that is certain is a lot of scholarship athletes are no longer going to be scholarship
athletes.
Right.
And what about walk-ons, too? Like, that's almost going to be yesterday's news.
Yeah, there's still going to be walk-ons.
There will be.
Yeah.
What we're trying to get people to understand is it's insane. I don't think anyone knows that it's all coming. I know there's conference realignment and NIL deals going on, and then there's the transfer portal. But this is something different that it all flows into.
One thing that it does help out, because under the current structure, foreign athletes are unable to collect NIL deals. They have to earn their money while they're outside of the states. When they come play, they will get a share of their revenue.
Right.
So
I was trying to figure out the name of the – I think I said it earlier when we were talking about it, but the name of who – remember we said that's scary – who's implementing a lot of this?
Oversight Committee?
The Oversight Committee. I had a name of what they were called, and I'll have to look back and find it, but it sounded like a shady crew.
Yeah, man, it's going to be a mess going forward. But
you wonder if someone like Nick Saban or somebody's going to step into this and be one of those people.
Well,
I think a lot of that is under the table right now. They're not coming out with anything, but buddy, it is getting close.
Well, when this first started,
he was going to be some sort of.
When this first started, they initially were putting Tommy Tuberville in charge.
Okay,
and I think that all changed. I mean, could you name one other politician that you think would be better at it?
Yeah, any of them.
Ross Perot.
I mean,
I think Tommy Tuberville. I mean, I'm not going to. This is not political.
Uh huh.
I think he is one of the dumbest human beings that's ever lived.
He was part of the game, and I mean, think that's why they went straight to him.
Nick Saban's involved in the revenue sharing and the transfer portal.
And I believe he was named an advisor of something.
I don't know how they would actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather it be a non-politician.
I completely agree with that.
It's like, you know, a Saban.
Well, the first person they put out there was Ted Cruz.
This is what,
and then he was supposed to lead the charge. And then who is the guy from Kentucky? Drawing a blank on his McGarvey
Jones.
No. This guy's a politician for Kentucky.
Mitch McConnell.
He wrote the main bill for this. No, it's not Mitch McConnell.
Thomas Massey.
No, it's not Thomas Massey.
Rand Paul.
No. McGarvey?
Morgan McGarvey.
Maybe.
He's our
Saban, I'm finding out about Saban is he is expected to co-chair a Trump administration commission on college sports, which is going to spearhead the transfer portal and collegiate revenue sharing.
Sounds to me, if you're not part of the SEC and you play a SEC school, you have to pay tariffs. That's what I gather.
What the hell you say?
Yeah, we'll play the Chinese All-Stars, but they got to pay us $200 billion.
There's a tariff on your tailgate spot right there, pal. You ain't parking that SUV.
And that right there is as political as this show will
be. Damn right. That's about as political as I know.
But, yeah, Tuna's been talking about this for a while, and I don't know if we were just ignoring it because I was more worried about it or what, but it is, after I dove into it, I know one of our listeners.
It's like the monster under the
bed.
You don't want to look under there.
Jimmy,
you know it's there.
Yeah, was talking to me about it, that we needed to get into this. And I think what's happening is a lot of people have no idea. They just know when the landscape's changing, NIL,
now
a transfer portal. But I don't think they understand what's really getting ready to change.
I'm going
to
tell you,
in college sports overall,
one of my scariest thoughts about this is college basketball teams that don't have football programs. Let's go to the Big East. St. John's. Do they just dump all their money into basketball and dominate everybody?
I mean,
well, that's what I was actually thinking about this when we were talking about this.
Why wouldn't they? They have no
The first team that came to my mind was Butler. I'm like, well, you know, Butler has like a D2 football program, but I was like, well, wait a minute. Does that mean Butler can take every dollar that they make and basically and say, we're going to build
now
a super team of Butler basketball?
Well, here's the thing.
Right?
Here's the thing. They don't have the television revenue from football that creates
the
big money.
Okay, right.
So whether or not they're going to have that $20 million, but like I said, boosters are still able to donate money into that, you know, to share
that
out.
That would be more likely to happen at St. John's.
That's why I used them as the example.
Well,
like Mike Rapoli could just dump like
$15
million
UConn
a year.
Why wouldn't UConn get rid of their football program and just go all out? They've already been winning national championships and just go straight up all basketball.
I mean, that could
be. And women's and men's.
It's a possibility.
It absolutely could.
I mean, you know, Marquette. There's a lot of teams in here that could do that. Now, I don't see Creighton or Butler or whatever that having – the boosters to get to
that
high point.
Right.
So I think it's going to be competitive. But even if, so like I said, the 60 or 70% that's going directly to football on your power conferences, so you're going to cut that $20.5 million down to like $12.5 million. They can still donate like $14 million straight to basketball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's – they're still going to have an advantage, some schools, like definitely St. John's, Georgetown,
and
Seton Hall's.
I could see like Butler, if that came down to it, you know, Eli Lilly buttons up, right? I mean, they got a lot of connections with, but I could see an outfit like Eli Lilly.
Yeah.
Fan of coming in. Hell, they could rename Hinkle Fieldhouse
the
Eli Lilly Pharmaceuticals Arena or whatever. And, it just opens up so much. I almost wish it was like 3 years down the road and we could see where this is all going.
I what would about, like a crystal ball. Also, I mean, I'm sure AI will figure it out for us.
What about yeah. what about the, you know what else is in this settlement we haven't talked about? It includes back payments for athletes who competed between 2016 and 2024.
Yeah. I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar.
Dude, back payments coming in.
No, how's that going to work?
You would get, the players would get the allotted amount that the players are making. I believe they take it and, like, reverse prorate it per season. So, okay. like, say, like, this year's 20.5, say next year's 21. And then, so last year was 19.5. And they'd say, okay, 70% of this was football. So if you were on that football team in, you know, 2023, you would get a share of what that, like,
and
prorated
then, and then how
number would be.
And this is, I don't know if this is something that you guys know. I don't know if anybody really. So say I was the backup long snapper on Indiana's team last year.
If you were on scholarship, you would get money.
But how would they figure out how much I was owed versus how much, like, Curtis Rourke would be owed?
I believe every player on that team makes the same amount of share.
Okay.
Every scholarship football athlete gets the same share. A quarterback doesn't make more than an offensive lineman.
Gotcha.
And that, I'm not 100% sure on that, but that's
but
the way that I understand it from reading.
Would
yeah.
be, like, Curtis Rourke sold 5,000
right.
jerseys. I sold two.
Right.
So
exactly.
Get,
he would make the share off of
right,
that.
I
the
gotcha.
Other thing
and
that
people
blows,
are going to show up to the local bars and restaurants and pay money for
to get his autograph.
To get
pictures
his.
And autographs.
The other thing that blows me away is roster size. For example, football rosters are going to increase possibly from 85 to 105.
Okay, that's what that was the increase.
Whereas,
that was the
increase. Right, baseball could be set at 34, just like a small minimum, and then this all filters into the college football playoff too, to a certain extent, to where they're doing the straight seeding. You know what I mean?
How so?
Well, they're just that those are three of the. You've got roster limits, scholarship changes. You've got the revenue sharing in the NIL.
Mm-hmm.
And the third major change is the college football playoff.
Oh, that's a separate change.
Yeah, but moving to doing straight seeding. These are all the things that are happening in July of 2025, which is, it is July of 2025, to where they're doing the straight seeding and no automatic buys. There's so many things changing. Also the realignment. Tuna, you've been talking about that.
Yeah, we've got a Pac-12 again. Texas State.
The replay reviews are changing.
Texas State just joined. And so I guess they had, I think they're one member short of being a recognized football conference, but that's about to change. So, Oregon State, man, they have been working. They have been out there picking up the phones and calling and being like, hey, Pac-12's still alive, baby. Come on
Dude,
over.
Dude, I love that the Pac-12's still alive.
Yeah. The Pac-12 media days, I know I bring it up a lot, but last year it was one of the saddest things I'd ever seen.
Well, there were two teams.
Yeah, with the Wildcat and the Beaver just sitting on the stage with their legs crossed. And, like, they had to put the mascot costumes on up there. It was so sad.
And you know what? Washington State had a pretty good year.
They did. They did. Oregon State did not. But, no, so as far as the changes go, I mean, it's an ongoing deal, man. Like, we don't really even know what's all going to happen
yet. I think
yet.
What's going to happen, let's look at, like, say, the average fan.
Uh-huh.
And now that we've said what we've said. I don't think they have any idea this is happening. They're still caught into that. Well, when are they going to change the playoff? And
tell
then their
me.
NIL and the transfer portal. I don't like that transfer portal, but what they're getting ready to find out is when they had season tickets to the baseball team, that the baseball team no longer exists. Yep. And they're going to be like, what are you talking about? Like, I mean, I don't think they understand.
And look at I know – everything's changed. Even like we talked about the last couple years in college athletics, how it was the Wild West and all this. But look at last year's college football season and tell me it wasn't one of the funnest college football seasons.
I had a blast.
The product from front to finish. So it didn't affect the quality of the game.
No.
Like, when the ball's kicked off, you ignore all that bullshit.
Right.
That's right.
And you get into it.
I think really the harder thing to organize in your university, on your, so let's use it, football, for example, on your athletic football team, that you're trying to orchestrate is the word I guess I'm looking for, is how do you balance the guys making all the money with the NIL and the guys that are kind of getting compensated a little bit, and how do you take those personalities?
Well, we've been watching that for the past couple of years.
I know, but
it was worse before.
It was worse before.
I do too.
Because
now everybody's getting it. I just still see it being, I'm talking about with athletes overall getting money.
Well, here's
I'm
the thing.
I'm not talking about someone getting,
it becomes a meritocracy where if you perform, people are going to want autographs for you and you're going to make more money. So you have more incentive to go out there and get
it. Are they going to work as hard?
I think they're
going to work as hard.
It depends, man. That's why these coaches make the money that they make,
I almost look at it as
the Colorado thing with Shedeur Sanders and some of that stuff that was going on the sidelines.
That was a unique circumstance, and I don't think Colorado was as big of a shit show.
Well, compare that to your boy for Texas, where there was no drama. There could have been tons of drama.
I think there was
with
a little
Texas.
Drama.
You really
in that Ohio State game
with Arch Manning?
In that Ohio State game,
I mean,
right there at the end,
it.
Several there was a few players that had left the team that said Sark's biggest mistake he made all year was sticking with Quinn Ewers.
Right,
you know what I mean. So if that comes out, you know it was talked about within. They just did a good job of hiding the rat poison, man.
Right.
But
I think there's going to be a lot more rat poison. Put it that way. That's what I'm getting at.
I'm with you.
In
keep
every
in mind,
school. And you're right. They all got to deal with it.
These athletes can still get big-time sponsorships. Like Gatorade can – if you're a top player, Gatorade can give you $10 million right now being their commercials. And that would equal out to Deloitte because that's what they pay their other athletes.
And I think the teams that have an advantage – and I'm literally using teams that we pull for in this basement. Use IU and Bama as an example. The Bama players are so used to being pampered, doing this, doing that. They've got the huge locker rooms that they had. I'm not saying IU doesn't have great facilities now and stuff, but we know that 8 years ago, Bama had the best facilities, or 10 years ago, whatever, when they were winning the national championship. Now you've got a guy like Kirk Cignetti over there that he handles his team a different way. Mm-hmm. He is like, it's us against the world. You guys are the up-and-coming players. I'm going to make you into professional athletes, and we're going to beat these big teams that have always punked us around.
That's a selling point.
I know. It's going to be fun to
He sells the blue-collar atmosphere.
Right,
but also, let me tell you that none of that happens without Indiana throwing a shitload of money at the football program.
Him. Right, right.
At him, at his coaches, at the facility, which they had never done before.
Right.
All that other stuff came with that. But the reason that that happened at its root is still because they decided to invest. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, the difference between an Alabama and an Indiana was so great from a facility standpoint, a monetary investment into infrastructure and nutrition and weight coaches and all that stuff. Well, now everybody's kind of not that Bama and LSU and those super top end aren't still a little bit ahead of the curve, but everybody else has leveled up.
Yeah.
To a much.
You think stadiums will start like say when Indiana or teams like that start building up their stadiums?
I don't think so. I think
like
you're going to see stadiums start to shrink.
The same.
I think you're going to see more luxury box and like luxury suites happen, and less general like you know, regular seating.
Right.
Because, first of all, less people are attending games.
Yeah,
it's
true,
just,
a,
I mean,
true.
It's just how it is.
Right.
And, you know, with the quality of games on television now and so on, less and less people. Plus, it's so expensive. Everybody's broke right now. It's
you
have to pick and choose what games you're going
right.
to go to.
You saw and heard what UK's doing, didn't you? At their at Kroger Field, they're putting in all these
on-field luxury suites.
And like areas all down below where everyone would just walk around and get a hot dog. Now it's like areas to hang out and watch the game down underneath and stuff.
See, UK's an interesting thing because they Stoops has been fighting kind of a losing battle for several years. He's catching a lot of hell down there, but he keeps asking for more and more money so he can try to build those indoor facilities and get, you know, upgrade some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gotten some of it, but when you compare what UK has to a lot of the rest of the SEC, they're lagging behind.
Right.
Oh, they are.
And for him to be competitive, minus last year, the way he has been, I think it's kind of been phenomenal. And then what UK's done, they've gotten rid of so much parking around that stadium. It's kind of a hassle down there now. And they're talking about building hotels there now and, like, this, like, entertainment area
out in
the
parking
area.
That's what I'm talking about. Entertainment area and underneath the
stadium. They're trying to draw more people to the games.
Right.
But when you got your Bamas and your Georgias and your other SEC schools that come up with their RVs, there's nowhere to park those RVs in Lexington.
No. Right.
That, like, it's not like these other SEC campus schools or, you know, stadiums. So I don't know.
It's all fascinating to me. It's very fascinating.
But I think what you're going to see is instead of stadium capacities going up, you're going to see more stuff to get big corporate suites and donors and all that stuff.
Right, and I think you've already seen that with Indiana as a prime example. They've closed in the entire stadium, but didn't really add seats per se. Mm-hmm. They added like a big, the hinky, whatever they call it, the Hall of Champions or whatever, different suite areas. If they end up building the east side of the stadium up, I have a feeling it'll be a level of luxury boxes somehow. And really, because
money talks,
I think that, you know, whatever Indiana holds, 53,000 or whatever, is probably about perfect for even if they're good consistently. Mm-hmm. But just a quick aside on that, what I find interesting is that Indiana's had, you know, a very successful season last year, and now ticket prices have gone up, prices of the parking passes have gone up, how they're divvying out the parking passes have gone up, people that have sat in the same seats for 1,000 years are now getting moved and everything, and everybody's bitching, and I'm going, you know, that sucks. It does, and it's affected some friends of mine. But that's also the price you pay for finally getting decent in football.
It is.
Like,
I mean,
that stuff changes, you know?
It does. And, you know, I think we're really close to seeing sponsorships on uniforms now. Like, there's only a matter of time for Louisville's walking around with UPS on their jerseys. Yeah. You know what?
And, you know, what's funny, and this happens with anything, but I can remember when they said they were going to do that with the NBA uniforms.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is the biggest pile of horse shit I've ever
Don't
heard
even
in
notice
my life.
It now.
Until you just mentioned it.
Yeah.
Now I'm going, oh, yeah, the Pacers had that Motorola thing on the side of their
It's a little thing. It doesn't bother me one bit.
Defending champs had the defending champs now had Loves.
I mean, we see it.
Yep. That's right. Oklahoma City has a Loves truck stop.
Yep.
We see it
and
on
– That's one of my favorite places here, Tuna.
Dallas needs Bucky's on there.
Oh,
they need a little Bucky on
a
there.
Bucky on there. Yeah.
But – No, I don't know. I mean, I could
When's
see Thornton's.
When's Louisville going to get a Bill's cheese?
Hey, you need to pony up and get on Louisville's uniforms.
We can talk to somebody at the Bill's cheese facility, and let's get some Bill's cheese on them Cardinals.
Well, I'll ask the CEO.
Or the Cats.
I'll ask the CEO if he has an extra $10 million lying around. I could probably get your foot in the door.
Okay. We'll find him. Let's go to his mansion soon.
Yeah.
It'll be Bill's Cheese slash High Noon.
But, you know, yeah, all that being said, and it's clearly we have just kind of scratched the surface of some of the things that are going on because, as Tuna said, there's so much unknown right now. And where this is going, I mean, God only knows where this is going to be in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could go a million different directions with a million different outcomes. It will be very interesting to see where that leads.
And one more thing before we move on. I want to talk about this just a little bit because I don't know the full scale of it, but we mentioned it outside. There has been talk of a Super League forming.
Right, and, yes.
This is a way, I believe, in the future that a lot of conference commissioners are looking at, a lot of school presidents, I guess, more than conference commissioners, are looking at separating out their football programs. So, Florida State has a loophole to get out of the ACC if they maintain all their other sports in the ACC, but football's out by itself. So you could see a world where Clemson, Florida State, Alabama, LSU, Penn State, all these top football programs, they form together in something called the Super League, which would be separated entirely from the NCAA, from my understanding, mm-hmm. to where that revenue sharing wouldn't even come into play. I think this is just kind of a, if you do this to us, we can do this to you. So that's something to keep an eye on. Like I said, I don't understand the full logistics of it yet. I don't think anybody does. People are just throwing words out like Super League and everybody freaks out. But that could end up killing a lot of football programs at some schools.
Right, and as we talked about outside, and not just an Indiana thing, this is a lot of schools of Indiana's particular stature, I think – maybe one of the reasons why teams like that started throwing a lot more money at football specifically is because they want to get their foot in that door at least to be considered for this thing.
Now, you know? And I think 2030 is the first year that could actually take effect for contractual reasons with whatever.
Right.
But so these next 5-6 years, it is imperative to build – and maintain a solid football program.
Absolutely.
Just for a hope that you get invited to the table.
Yes. Yes.
You know.
Even to be in consideration.
Yes.
You're going to have to come to the table with something.
And if they do it, we need relegation.
Oh, man.
That would – see,
good.
That's
would
one way
so
I could get behind it. If
oh,
you had a Super
so
League
good.
And then a kinda Super
do.
League underneath
please
of it.
Do.
Like if Louisville and IU are playing in the kinda Super League,
oh,
and then we win
to,
it,
chance
just
to move,
move up.
Oh,
see
that would be so great.
Draw my interest a little bit, and
oh,
then
of course.
Underneath the kinda Super League, a really not so Super League at all, and then that's where you're like your James Madisons and
yeah,
East, you know,
chance to bump up to the not
exactly.
so Super League.
Yeah.
Oh, I had never thought about that.
I just now thought about
that
it.
That is tremendous. The kind of insight you'll only get here.
So we take something that sounds so scary and negative and put a positive twist on it. All right.
That's right.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. Tuna, you are such a fucking positive person. I mean.
God, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, so all that business stuff, you know, like I said, I think we just kind of scratched the surface on that tonight. Moving forward. Probably starting maybe next week, we're going to start getting into the actual teams, the actual college football previews as we move. What are we, like
46 days.
46 days.
By the time you listen to this right now, it will be 45 days.
And that is unbelievable. I am as excited for this college football.
Countdown to Farmageddon.
And that's what we do. We are.
Yeah, that's our that's our main focus and really our niche, I think.
That's what I think about 365 days out of the year.
Yeah.
There's a couple hours outside of each of those days I think about something else. But during most of those days, it's college football.
And so we'll be getting into that deep in the weeds as we always do, doing our conference breakdowns, predictions, etc. I told the guys outside I'm not going to spoil it on this show, but I've already made one future bet.
Hell yeah.
Relative to next season. Some of you longtime listeners might have an idea. It's similar to a futures bet I had a couple of seasons ago. We'll leave it at that. But very quickly, I need to go take care of one really quick thing. We are going to take about a 3-minute break, and we will be right back to finish up this episode of The Blockout. Okay, we are back. Very quickly, just want to remind everybody we are on social media. If you enjoy the show, find us there on Twitter or Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a follow. Give us a 5-star review wherever you find your favorite podcast. If you have the ability to do that, it would be very much appreciated. We have a few different things to get to here at the end of the show. Probably a little bit longer than maybe we typically do here. That's why we've left some time here at the end. As we are in the downstairs pub, as your host and moderator, I'm going to go ahead and call last call, and we're going to start with Tuna tonight.
I don't have a lot here. I've got the kid, Louisville's top recruit, Michael Brown Jr. This is a little local thing. He competed over in the FIBA under 19.
I saw that.
Look good.
Tournament, and
they won the gold medal.
From what I seen, they did. He's coming back with a gold medal. And from what I seen, he was the best player on the floor.
By far.
And I cannot remember the last time Louisville's had a recruit like this.
Carlos Turner.
You talking about Carlos Hurt?
Hurt? I'm kidding.
I think there was a kid for Purdue that did really good in that tournament that's coming into Purdue also.
From what I gathered, the kid going to BYU, AJ DeBonta, he got MVP in that, but I'm not really sure how. But anyway, he looked good. You can tell he's really good. And the kid going to Arizona, Koa Pete, that kid is going to be really good. But as far as
related to Rodney Pete?
I don't know, maybe. Okay. I think it's spelled completely different. He's spelled like Pete Moss. Okay. But Louisville fans, you got something to be excited for, because we haven't had a guy like this probably since Purvis Ellison coming as a true freshman. So, and it's crazy
awesome
to say that. I'm excited about that. Another thing, happy birthday to the Dalai Lama. it's big. He gave Bill Murray total consciousness before he died with Gunga Galunga.
Yes.
So happy birthday,
which
big
is nice.
Guy. Yeah, it's exactly. Which is nice. He's got that going for him.
You know, his brother, I mean, not to always take everything back to IU, his brother, who has sadly passed away, when I was growing up, Bloomington had the only Tibetan restaurant in the United States.
I love Tibetan food.
The Dalai Lama's brother owned, it was called the Snow Lion.
Mm.
And one afternoon, I was downtown Bloomington. I worked down there at the time. And I came out of the building in which I worked, and I looked down the street, and I saw Harrison Ford, Steven Seagal, and the Dalai Lama's brother walk by.
What a group of dudes right there. What a group of dudes.
Wow.
If only Van Damme was over there somewhere.
I'm not sure he had a lot to do with the Buddhist culture.
Yeah, but he could have just been hanging out.
Tuna, before we move on from you, I did want to touch base on you. You were out last week on a little vacation.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, are there any highlights you needed to hit? Any people you needed to acknowledge, anything that you wanted to share with the listeners out there about
come back with
your
some new
week.
Wheels or something?
I did have to get a new set of tires. I had a blowout on the way back, and they are not cheap for a truck like mine. Things are just different when you get in the 606 area code in the state of Kentucky.
You're in the Ozarks, right?
No, okay. No. I was down at Cave Run Lake.
Okay.
Now, there are several counties that come up on as part of Cave Run Lake. I'm not going to tell you which one. Travis did a good job of not giving anything away last week,
right?
Because there was a sheriff deputy that was living down the street from us in our little cabin that we were staying at. And this was maybe one of the most intriguing human beings that I've ever met in my life. And I'm not sure. I don't know if they just make everybody a deputy sheriff. If you just be like, you know what, I might be interested in that job.
Hey, I got a shed full of guns.
Yeah, exactly. Like just a bunch of them, and they're just in a shed. So anything you want to fire off, help yourself, boys. And you know, this guy, he had a dog that he told us. He said, watch out for copperheads around here. They're pretty thick. He said, my dog got bit by one a couple months ago, and I was going to take him to the vet, but they wanted $300 that night. But if I waited till the morning, I could get it for $100. He's like, so I made that dog suffer through the night, and he did just fine.
Okay.
Yeah, he toughened that dog up, I tell you.
That's a life lesson.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
There.
Don't go that night. Make that dog wait it out. Jeez. But I found the Freddy Benders of a Cave Run Lake down there.
Okay.
Social chairman, as it were.
Yeah, social chairman. I guess this guy lived in like a motel that he didn't rent out the rooms. He didn't sell booze in a bar.
Yeah, a golf cart or a mule?
Nope. Just place that people. He had a sign out there that made it look like a bar.
Oh, nice.
So people would come visit, and sure as hell,
Phillip 66.
In there just to hang out with this guy every night.
Phillip 66.
Yeah. It was definitely an intriguing adventure. But I got spent a couple days on the kayak out there, and that sun. I underestimated it.
Yeah.
It got me. When noon hits, you're usually good till around 11. And then once 11 and noon start hitting, those shade lines on the shore start to really disappear. And then next thing you know, you're just in it and you're eating it. And there ain't no sunscreen. I know that's a word that you don't understand, Fred.
But there's
a product called
that?
Sunscreen. It's
okay.
Made for people like me.
Okay.
But
yeah, your thighs look like
buddy, I told you
look like the Miami FC's pink jerseys.
They are strawberries, buddy. They I told you a while back I got two shades, red and white. And right now I'm in my red phase. But
awesome,
it was a great trip, man. Yep. I highly recommend Cave Run Lake to anybody if you guys haven't been down there.
We're glad to have you back and glad you had a great time. Fred, last call.
I want to say rest in peace to Diogo Jota, a great player that played for Liverpool and Portugal. I don't think people, when they knew that he had passed away in a car accident with his younger brother, who was a great player in itself, up-and-coming player, how good he really was. But I guess if you wanted to equal it out with I'm trying to think of the damn place that he played for, Liverpool. He played along Mo Salah, who's one of the greatest players in the world. I would say it would be the equal to a Jaylen Brown to a Jason Tatum dying. An all-star that's that great, I hate to bring him that comparison down, but that's, if you didn't know how good he was, that's how good he was. So rest in peace to his family and everything, and the soccer world is really going to lose one there. A great player and a great person from what I heard. Also, I do want to say that I am picking the score tomorrow in the PSG Real Madrid game, and PSG is going to win. And my player Kavara, they call him Kavara, Tuna, you will love him. He is Kvyat Shikaiklia of Georgia, and he is a left winger, and he is so damn fun to watch. He looks like Kenny Loggins over there, juking people. Does he not, Travis?
He does.
He does, and he goes by the name Kvyat. I just figured out who this guy was. So that tells you that I'm been off on soccer a little bit to know that this guy's that great. He's got a little attitude too. And I wanted to say that, man, I'm telling you, one of the best, through listening to all this soccer and getting in these two tournaments, you get to, you hear the color guy, you go through, listening to different, you know, the halftime show and all that. And I want to tell you, I really am praying that this guy's doing the World Cup coming up. But there's a guy by the name, a past soccer player, Brian Dunseth, that does these games, these club World Cup games. He did the game today with Chelsea. And I'm going to tell you, nobody better than him.
He'll be on the broadcast of the World Cup.
Oh, my God. That guy is fantastic. And then, other than that, I just wanted to end on a happy note that Tuna gave me some great information that they make a four-pack of High Noon pear flavor.
Yep.
One of my favorite flavors, pear. A four pack. I thought you had to get them in a assortment pack, Travis. And I have found out from Tuna here, I'm going to be on the search because pear is one of them underdog flavors.
You know, pear is one of them flavors. Nobody even considers it a flavor for much, dude, but it's so good. Like it even the fruit, you don't see people eating pears enough.
Yeah, you got to peel them. They're kind of hairy.
You ain't
got to
peel it. It ain't hairy.
You eat that hairy.
What kind of pears are you eating?
Oh, I'm thinking of a kiwi.
Yeah. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, what I was getting at was...
pear is just like a green oblong apple.
No, you're right. You can eat a green oblong apple.
Yeah.
And then, but man, thank you for that heads up because kiwi and guava were my other two faves. So I'm going to look for that four pack. Appreciate that.
I got your back, man. That's what I'm here for.
All right. On to you, Travis.
Happy Freddy. Happy life.
That's exactly right. Our life is a lot easier down here when Freddie's happy. just a couple quick things. Number one thing we talked about outside before we came on the air was the video that's gone viral today of some golfers that were apparently too inebriated to get their ball on the tee box, and the group behind them was waiting 25 minutes or whatever. Tensions escalated, tempers flared, and I would just say seek out the video. Just type into your Google machine Canadian golf fight, and you will find a couple of the most entertaining minutes of video that have been out in quite some time.
It involves a former hockey enforcer named Nick Taronsky.
And Nick Taronsky acquitted himself quite well,
shall we say,
in this particular...
I love the New York Post. Fisticuffs. Golfer pummeled.
Yes.
Imagine you're drunk starting shit in a golf course, and then you realize it's like a hockey enforcer that you're dealing
well,
with.
Well, I mean, I would think the fact that you looked at the guy and he's like 6'4", 270...
That guy was so drunk, I don't think he knew like how tall that guy was.
He probably didn't.
Now keep in mind, Nick Taronsky was kind of standing down by the by the punt. So maybe he just didn't understand that he was on a slope.
But I don't want to give too much away, except to say that this former hockey enforcer did say explicitly to the guy, if you come at me, I'm going to throw you in that lake over there.
Yeah.
And... the guy came at him and he threw him in that lake over there.
Wow.
And it was definitely seek that out. Another thing, and this is a total like guilty pleasure thing that I've found the last 2 weeks, and this would be for those of you that are local, and I guess you don't really have to be necessarily local. I follow a Facebook group. I believe it's called like Louisville Hood News is what it's called on Facebook. And the last and the last couple of weeks on Saturdays, they have been live streaming from this guy's backyard.
God, this is so up my alley.
Just these random dudes that show up in this guy's backyard. They put like yellow safety rope up as three sides of the ring. The guy's fence is the fourth side of the ring.
Safety first.
Yeah. The first week I saw a guy get hit. Not only did he get hit really hard, and then he smacked into that fence, and people were going, oh, man, I sure hope that guy's okay. And about 25 minutes later, that guy was the guy that was doing the narration for the rest of the fight. So, I've had Colin watching it. It's something kind of fun, and like I said, kind of a guilty pleasure. If you're a local and you happen to be scrolling Facebook on a Saturday night, just give that a look.
Is there any chance you can watch some of the past fights?
You know that I don't.
Gopher gets like a rag doll. I love these words, pummeled rag doll.
They do have a YouTube channel, and next week I will find that and let everybody know, because I think that they archive.
Share it on our Twitter account.
I think that they archive it on their YouTube channel as well. One other thing, I watched a really interesting, entertaining documentary last night. It's only like 45 minutes long, 50 minutes long.
Poop Cruise.
About Rob Ford. Do you guys remember Rob Ford? He was the mayor of Toronto like in 2009, 2010-ish. No. He became like the punchline of all the late night people because he got caught on multiple occasions smoking crack.
Hmm.
And
it's low hanging fruit.
It really like gives you more of a, like I had just kind of thought of him as this funny, he's a kind of like a Chris Farley type. Mm-hmm. That's who he reminds you of, like Chris Farley. He really has that kind of energy and everything. Anyway, it's on Netflix, and if you just type in Rob Ford, you can find it. And I found it interesting. It's less than an hour long, something easy and very entertaining to watch. What's this one, Fred?
You just seeing the fight?
Yeah. He's wearing bikini underwear.
But that's about all I've got for tonight. We will be back with you next week I guess we're going to start probably doing our college football previews next week. So I'm very excited about that. Looking forward to the soccer games and all that for the rest of this week. Quick reminder again, if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. Tell them you can find our show wherever you find your favorite podcast. Just type in the Blockout Sports Pod and you can find us. With all that being said, for the big fella, the Tuna Country, Matt Kempf, and the fabulous one, Freddie Benders, this is Travis Carter saying, so long, everybody.